This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you News of the World Night Special. Tonight International, the inside story of the Truman Get Tough with Russia policy. Geneva, the Daily Worker takes one on the editorial chin. Rome, more violence, more talk in crucial Italy. Chicago, landmark on the auction block. Those are the headlines. I'll be back in a moment with News of the World.
Ever bump into a day when everything seems to go wrong?
Believe me, I have, Mr. Elder. And it always seems it happens when I have extra things to do around the house, like when company's coming. That's when the vacuum cleaner goes haywire, when I break one of my best dishes, and then to top it all, on days like that, the cake usually falls.
Yeah, me too. I have days like that, only it doesn't have anything to do with cakes falling. It's days when the work is piled up, the telephone rings more than usual. I have more interruptions, more questions to answer, and all that.
And very likely such a day causes a headache now and then.
Yes, and that's all I need on a day like that.
But here's something you could use. And I mean a glass of sparkling Alka-Seltzer. Just dissolve one or two Alka-Seltzer tablets in a glass of water and then drink the bubbling, effervescent solution this makes. Why, in almost no time at all, you should notice that pain going away, and there's a good reason for that speed. Since Alka-Seltzer is dissolved before you take it, the pain-relieving agents are ready to go right to work. And because of its effervescent base, Alka-Seltzer gets there fast, gives fast relief. Get a package of Alka-Seltzer from your druggist and try it for that occasional headache. Let Alka-Seltzer help you feel better fast. And now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
News of the World can report to you tonight exclusively the basic reason why the Truman administration has decided to get tough with Soviet Russia and stay that way. The highest officials of our government have decided after careful investigation that the very few men in high places in Soviet Russia who want to meet the United States halfway are practically prisoners of the blind wing of the Kremlin. By blind wing, they mean the Russian leaders who refuse to see the increasing anger of the world outside Soviet Russia, or who fail to see it because they do not even know it is serious or realize it's serious. This blind wing of the Kremlin, or rather the Politburo inside the Kremlin, usually follows the lead of Foreign Minister Vyacheslav Molotov. He is, always has been, for being tough with the West every step of the way, come war or high water. Stalin usually sits in judgment between the two wings of the Politburo. The Molotov wing has the inside track because of the peculiar nature of the Soviet system. The nature of that system, incidentally, is revealed in great detail, pessimistic detail, we might note, by one of our own high officials, Mr. Frederick H. Osborne of the State Department. In a speech in Louisville, Kentucky, less than an hour ago, Mr. Osborne explained how the Kremlin operates. He detailed the Soviet system. He spoke out on the basis of evidence revealed in the daily workings of the United Nations Atomic Commission. In the first place, said Mr. Osborne, there's the Iron Curtain, which prevents the free circulation in the Soviet Union of news of the outside world, the curtain that encourages biased reports by Soviet government agents to the Kremlin. Second, there's centralized, controlled propaganda to mold public opinion inside the country. And finally, there's the secret police to prevent all free expression of dissenting public opinion, and that is bolstered by Siberian concentration camps. It's this system, Mr. Osborne insists, that allows no latitude to Russia's delegates to international conferences. Soviet diplomats report only what they think their masters want to hear. Thus, correct information is prevented from getting back to the Kremlin. Here's the pessimistic conclusion Mr. Osborne draws from the evidence in front of him. Until this Soviet system is changed, it seems unlikely that the Soviets will alter their views sufficiently to make possible agreement on the control of atomic energy, or indeed agreement on any of the other major problems on which the Soviet Union is refusing to cooperate for world peace. Now to leave Mr. Osborne report. American statesmen have very reluctantly given up hope that the anti-Molotov wing of the Kremlin would any time soon get a chance to express its conviction that there could be a meeting of the minds between East and West. What annoys our statesmen most is that they themselves were not foresighted enough. They did not see the inevitability of Russian inflexibility. This leads them, we might add, to worry about Americans who think it possible to persuade Stalin to come halfway with Truman at some meeting in a neutral country. Even if Stalin wanted to come halfway, actually, he could not do so without himself incurring the suspicion of the majority in the Politburo. All the experience of all Western diplomats, both socialistic and our own, and there is not a single dissenter among them, all their experience shows that any offer by the West to try to find a common ground for agreement would be taken inside the Kremlin as complete surrender by the West. Meanwhile, the struggle goes forward. A focal point, Rome. Here's Henry Cassidy in Rome.
The Italian election campaign is growing increasingly rough. 6 persons have been killed in the last 2 days in disorders connected more or less with politics, and tomorrow, the truce committee, composed of delegates from all the major parties, will meet to see whether civil peace can be preserved until the Italians vote April 18th. The most costly rioting has occurred on the rocky island of Pantelleria that was liberated by the Allies on their way from North Africa to Italy. Dispatches from the island report 3 persons were killed and 14 wounded in a demonstration against government taxes. Airborne troops were flown in to maintain order. 1 person was killed by a hand grenade thrown into a crowd outside a village church near Genoa, but the most important disturbance politically has been the riot yesterday at the village of Somalia near Milan, where 2 persons have now died after a clash between right and left. Original dispatches from the scene reported the rioting was caused by a communist raid on a rightist meeting, but now the communists have raised their familiar cry of martyrdom. The 2 dead were theirs. Demonstrations of protest have been held by workers in the northern industrial city of Milan. Leftist newspapers are complaining, and the funeral will be an occasion for further protest. This is the kind of incident that the Communist Party, when it so wishes, can take as the pretext for widespread trouble. The meeting of the truce committee in the morning is expected to show whether the election campaign will continue on the agreement for peace or whether the Communist Party will break away in violence. This is Henry Cassidy in Rome.
Another point of contact with the Russians, Switzerland. For the recorded story, here's Leon Pearson in Geneva, Switzerland.
This is the story of a confidential transatlantic telephone call from Geneva to Washington in which an American statesman said, in effect, "We can take care of the Russians, but the Lord protect us from our friends." The man who made the call was William B. Benton, former Assistant Secretary of State, who heads the American delegation to the International Conference on Freedom of the Press. Benton and his colleagues have been battling for days with the Russians, accusing them of unmitigated censorship and defending the free press of the United States. Then, as earnest of good faith, the delegation offered an international treaty which would eliminate censorship and facilitate the movement of journalists throughout the world. But what happened in Washington on the same day this treaty was proposed in Geneva? In Washington, the State Department revealed it had refused a passport to an American journalist who wanted to attend this conference in Geneva. His name, A.B. McGill of the Communist Daily Worker. When Benton and his colleagues heard about it, they hit the roof. A secret meeting was called of the American delegation. Some were State Department people themselves, some were not. But they voted to a man to send a protest to the State Department against this infringement of the very freedom of the press which the conference was called to encourage. The result was that Benton picked up the telephone in his room in the Hotel des Bergues overlooking Lake Geneva and asked to speak to the State Department in Washington. He told the department in very firm language that the American delegation was being seriously compromised in discussing press freedom in Geneva when press freedom was being denied in Washington. He said he hoped the passport would be granted before the Russians began to make capital of the incident. This is Leon Pearson in Geneva.
Now, News of the World special feature. It takes an auctioneer to prove sometimes that the hands of the clock do not stand still between generations. Here's Jim Hurlbut in Chicago.
This is not a home, this suburban lakeshore mansion that's on the auction block. It's a museum, a Hollywood property department, an Arabian Nights palace loaded with art treasures, antiques, and curios. $3 million worth under one roof. The house itself was built in 1921 by the famous and fabulous American architect Benjamin Marshall, at a cost of $1 million. It houses an indoor tropical garden with 40-foot palm trees, a Chinese temple room, a Scandinavian bar room, a swimming pool, a gymnasium, an early Egyptian solarium. Now, the widow of its late owner, Nathan Goldblatt, sells it piecemeal at auction. Here's a wire recording of a single sale by auctioneer Homer Goldstein.
A very important game chest with stand. It was purchased by the Earl of Caveron from the Paris Exposition of 1884 for 1,000 guineas, which was equivalent to $6,000. Gertrude Lawrence brought it to this country in 1912. It supposedly has 1,000 games in ivory and pearl. What is your pleasure to start this magnificent game set off? What am I bid? $100 I'm bid. $200 I'm bid. $250 I'm bid. All done, $250, $300 I have. Well, ladies and gentlemen, somebody paid $6,000. I have $300. $350 I have. Don't lose it if you can use it.
And so the bidding went up.
$375 I have. $575 once, $575 twice. $600 I have. $600 once, $600 twice. $625 I have. $625 once, $625 twice. $650 I have. $650 once, $650 twice. All done. All done. Sold $650.
And that's how to buy a fabulous treasure at auction. This is Jim Hurlbut in Chicago.
Now around the world in a minute and a half. Washington, it was forward march again with foreign aid today. The Senate approved nearly $500 million for China aid. The House included Spain temporarily in aid to Europe. The House Appropriations Committee voted another $150 million to atomic energy so the Atomic Commission can put on a burst of speed. And there's an extra $11 million for a military highway Seward to Anchorage, Alaska. But Republican Representative Claire Hoffman of Michigan spotted one item of aid to Europe he didn't like. The money for corn derivatives, he said, smelled like money for corn whiskey. We don't need to get them drunk to stop communism, he shouted. The House agreed with him. They put a new phrase in the law saying, not a single cent for corn whiskey to Europe. Bogota, Colombia, Pan America decided today to discuss communism on this side of the Atlantic and what to do about it. The Western Hemisphere republics agreed at the Inter-American Conference that this subject must be number one. That was after Secretary of State George Marshall asked if subversive activities could be brought up. Lake Success, New York. Soviet Russia's Andrei Gromyko charged today that the United States was sacrificing Palestine for the oil of the Middle East. The New York Daily Mirror says tonight, incidentally, that President Truman is going to lift the arms embargo against Palestine tomorrow. And that's what happened around the world today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Did you ever want Alka-Seltzer for relief, say, from occasional headache or acid indigestion, and find the bottle empty? Well, don't let it happen again. Buy an extra 30 or 60 cent size package of Alka-Seltzer from your druggist. Yes, buy two instead of one, for an extra package on the side keeps a household well supplied.
Mothers, are you having trouble getting your children and your family to take their vitamins every day? Try giving them one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules. Each one-a-day brand multiple capsule contains all the vitamins for which the amount needed for grown-ups and children has been established. What's more, one capsule every day is all they take. And one-a-day brand multiple vitamin capsules are low in cost, a full 2 months supply for only $2. Ask your druggist for one-a-day brand vitamins, good for growing children and adults. Remember, for vitamins the easy way, for vitamins the thrifty way, the brand you want is one a day.
Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. New York, the Wall Street Day. Seaman joined striking stock exchange employees on the picket line today and tried to block the entrance to the exchange. The tough boys ran into tougher police. The picket line was broken. Tonight, the stock exchange employees and the management met to explore their differences. Stock Exchange President Emil Schramm, with bankers and brokers ready to run orders and man the telephone exchange, said the market is ready for a bigger day tomorrow, strike or no strike. Detroit, the automobile day. General Motors and Chrysler negotiators and the United Auto Workers Board reported no progress today in new contract discussions. After the meetings, the auto workers ordered a special assessment of a dollar against all 950,000 of its members. That's a sure sign of stormy industrial weather. Salem, the Oregon Supreme Court ruled today that a Nevada divorce is legal in Oregon only if the divorce hunter actually changes his residence to Nevada. The 6 weeks trip to Reno will not be recognized. And that's the news of the world. Until tomorrow at this same time, this is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.